Check, check, check. Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. Check 1, 2. Check 1, 2. 1, 2, 3, 4. Check 1, 2, 3, 4. Check 2. Hello and welcome in. I'm Jesse, joined by Adam, and we're awesome. That's who we are. That's how we roll. All right, let's turn it back just a bit. Let's flip it back, and here we go. They're now tarping here. I don't know if I hear the echo. Turn that down a bit. And turn this up a bit. And we'll see what we think. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I'm looking for an echo right here. Hello and welcome into Great Lakes. Well, fans, currently, they are tarping the field at Great Lakes. Jesse Goldberg-Strassler here, joined by Adam Jaxa. They're still doing first pitches, and so a ceremonial first pitch has just run out in front of the pitcher's mound, deals into a Great Lakes loon, and there you go. Well, the tarp is now covering the field entirely. It's a shame. Here's what we're going to do instead. Let me pull up a Ken Joyce. Exactly. It is a great pleasure to be joined by the manager of the Lugnuts from 2005 through 2006. Ken Joyce is the hitting coach for the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. Utter tugger this weekend. It is a great pleasure to make your acquaintance. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And it's great to be back in Midwest League and pleasure to meet you.
Midwest League changed a little bit?
It has a little bit. Yes, it has. Obviously, some new teams have come in since I left, and a lot of renovations at a lot of the stadiums, including this one right here. And I was really, really surprised when I got here to see how well the stadium has come about and what they've done with the new batting cages, the new clubhouse. We got a commissary, we got a player's lounge. I mean, the coach's room is huge. So, yeah, it's been quite a good pleasure coming here to be in Wisconsin.
I was tracing your career path, let alone from Lansing to Wisconsin. I want to go way back. How did you become volunteer bullpen coach in Portland?
So I was a phys ed teacher in South Portland, Maine. saw a newspaper article on the Portland Sea Dogs, the AA affiliate at that time of the Florida Marlins. They were coming into existence, and the manager, there was an article on Carlos Tosca, who was the manager of the Sea Dogs, who was a former middle school phys ed teacher who basically played at the University of South Florida for a guy by the name of Jack Butterfield. Jack Butterfield happened to have been the head coach of the University of Maine at one time and coached my college and high school coach, Ed Flaherty. So right there I had a connection in that I had very similar background to what I've learned baseball-wise as Carlos had. But what happened was Jack Butterfield became the farm director for the Yankees, hired Carlos Tosca as his bilingual coach in Oneonta, New York, even though Carlos never played professionally. So I'm reading this article about this guy who got into pro ball who never played. And went down, introduced myself to him, told him that I'd like to learn as much baseball as I can. At the time, I was a JV high school coach, and told him that anything that I can do to help him out, let me know. And he's like, actually, we need a bullpen catcher, because Charles Johnson is our first-round pick, and I don't want him getting beat on. And he says, when's the last time you caught? And I said, when I was 12, and at this point, I'm 29 years old. But he asked me to come down and do a simulated game the next day, which I told him I'd do, but then all of a sudden he realized I was teaching the next day, and he said, how are you going to do that? And I said, I'll take a personal day. He goes, no, you won't. You got the job. But the job entitled absolutely no money.
Volunteer.
I had to sign a waiver saying that if anything had happened to me, I was on my own insurance. And that's how I started. And it started out catching bullpens. Again, I learned a lot about catching because I was doing the drills with Charles Johnson. So Joe Breeden, our catching coordinator, got in there. I learned everything about base running and outfield from Rusty Kuntz. Tony Taylor taught me everything about infield. Jack Maloof was the hitting coordinator. I learned a lot about hitting. Meanwhile, Carlos gave me the choice of, do you want a locker in here with me or out there with the players? And I said, well, I'm not here to be a player. I'm here to be a coach. And so that's kind of how it all started. Next thing you know, John Bowles comes into town, who was the farm director. And John comes in and asks me if I want to do this for a living. And I said, I'd love to, but unfortunately, I never played professionally. And he said, Carlos never did either. And I said, I understand that, but he's also bilingual, and that helped. And he said, well, what about me? And I said, honestly, sir, I've never heard of you before. And he goes, I never played professionally. I was a college guy, coached at Cincinnati. So I'm going to ask you again, do you want to do this for a living? And I said, yes, sir. Took my name down. A year and a half later, he became the new manager of the Florida Marlins. Jeff Pentland was our hitting coach in AA. I had been working with Jeff all year. He was living with my wife and I, sitting up every night talking hitting with him. He got promoted to the big leagues, and I got hired to be the AA hitting coach with the Florida Marlins.
These were legendary Marlins teams. This was a loaded system. You mentioned Charles Johnson, but it goes beyond that. There's Kevin Millar. Here comes Mark Hotze. Here comes Todd Dunwoody. And you guys won, and you hit. And how much of a joy was it to work with that kind of talent?
It was fun. And my first player that I ever worked with that got to the big leagues was Edgar Renteria. And to this day, I owe Edgar, and I tell him that whenever I see him, because Edgar got the game-winning hit in 97 that beat the Cleveland Indians and got me my first ring. And in 2010, when I went to the San Francisco Giants, I had him in AAA. He came on rehab. He was our shortstop with the Giants in the big leagues, came down on rehab, and after his week of rehab, his last hit, it was time for him to get pinch run for. And I said, hey, Edgar, you're all set. You're going to go back. He gives me a hug. Thanks, puppy. Anything you need? And I said, yeah, I got two kids now. I need another ring. Well, in 2010, he hit a three-run home run that put us ahead in the game to clinch it. So I look at my first two of the four World Series rings I have were from Edgar.
From the Marlins. Then a couple of years in independent baseball, right?
Well, yeah. It was independent ball after I left the Marlins, and I went back and taught middle school again in Portland while I was doing that.
Who was harder to work with, middle schoolers or baseball players?
That's a tough question.
Yeah. But from that, then you joined the Toronto Blue Jays organization, right?
Yes,
How did that happen?
So J.P. Ricciardi became the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and he hired Dick Scott, who's from Ellsworth, Maine. And Dick called me up, and I was the first hire that Dick made. So J.P. was the first hire. I mean, Dick was the first hire from J.P. I was the first hire from Dick. And was there through 2009, had a nice run, and then ended up in 2010 going to the Giants. But I enjoyed my time in Toronto, and with a lot of good players we developed, including my time managing in Lansing.
Let's talk about that. So you'd been the manager in Charleston, and the affiliation switch happens in terms of now the Blue Jays single-A affiliate is in Lansing, Michigan. What was your first impression like of Lansing?
I loved it when I got there, and it's interesting because it was another capital. People don't realize there's a lot of capitals, state capitals, that have teams that are around, and obviously being in East Lansing was fun, and one of the first things that happened when I got off the plane, get on the bus, is the bus driver gave me a hug and said, "That's from JoJo." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness." And what had happened is Joanne Palumbo McCauley, who was the women's basketball coach, had been dropped off that day to go to the Final Four for Michigan State, and she and I were very close in high school, and we're kind of had done shooting competitions together in high school. And so it was kind of a neat thing that I was like, "Oh, I'm in JoJo's home now," and it just ties everything in. I call it the web of the game, but so yeah, like she and her husband would come over and see games with us, and, but I enjoyed Lansing. I was a little worried my first night. First night managing in Lansing, I thought I was going to get booed out of the stadium because Casey Jansen had a no-hitter going, and I had to remove him for a pitch count. And, of course, the reliever came in and gave up a hit right off. And I had three cameras in my face after the game asking me why I took him out. And, you know, "Do you see this guy, you know, pitching in the big leagues?" And I said, "Well, yeah, that's the reason I had to take him out." And I said, "If he pitches like that, it won't be long." And I think it was a year and a half later, he was in the big leagues. But, you know, I don't think fans understood that night that I had to pitch count any further.
That's what stands out to me in looking at your teams in Lansing. 2005, Jansen was dominant. 2006, onward into the postseason to lose in the second round. There was something else that happened. So earlier in this series, Jack Winkler hits for the cycle. So I'm looking up historically Lugnut cycles. Do you remember Chip Cannon's cycle at all?
I do remember Chip Cannon's cycle. Yeah. And the one for that, for him, was getting the triple. And a lot of people don't realize this. Chip Cannon, out of the Citadel, had a club foot. People don't realize that. And he hit it because he wore the pants down. But if he wore his pants up, one of his legs almost looked like a fungo bat. So Chip actually was born with that and got high up in the minor leagues playing with that because of his pure power. But the funny thing is we were trying to get him to third base. We were like, "Come on, get here, get here." And, yeah, that was a highlight for him and a highlight for the organization to see him get, do what he did. And then to go on in Double-A and hit the home runs that he did. He had a pretty good career. And great guy. Still keep in touch with him. I've seen him, like, you know, a lot, like I said, a lot of fond memories of Lansing. The Booster Club there was outstanding. They supported the players. And you know, some things that happened along the way. We had the umpire strike at one point while I was there. And one of our host families, the dad was actually one of the replacement umpires. And
were you helping the umpires through it?
It was funny because he's up in, we were in Battle Creek, and he comes out the home plate, and the other manager looks at me, Skeeter Barnes looks at me, he goes, I go, "Yeah," he sits behind our dugout, he's a seasoned, to get old, and he goes to our fans, he's like, "Seriously?" I'm like, "But he's not going to cheat for us." "Are you?" He goes, "No, I won't.
Skeeter's his own personality. I love Skeeter.
Skeeter's like, "Come on." Like, yeah. So that was it. And then the other interesting thing is, right after the strike ended, my older brother Kevin had come out to Wisconsin, to Appleton, to do the Division III World Series. He umpired the Division III World Series, and then bussed over to Lansing to be with me, and then came on the road with us. And we went into South Bend, and it was in the first inning where the base umpire pivoted to make a call on a double play at first base, and I heard a pop, and he popped his cap, and couldn't, I mean, they had to cart him off.
Yeah.
And at that point, Todd Dunwoody was the hitting coach for South Bend, and he yells to me, "What about Kevin?" And I'm like, "No, no." Mark Haley, the mayor's like, "Who's Kevin?" I said, "My brother." He's right there. He's my brother. Kevin also has been a replacement umpire in Double-A in Portland. Does it all the time. So Mark goes, "Does he ever stop?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's in my car." So go get it. So all of a sudden, here comes my brother. He's umpiring right now.
That's wild.
The bases. Yeah. So it was kind of, again, web of the game. And I just remember standing at third base, looking over at him, going, "Oh, yeah, I'd be pretty proud of this one right now." And then he made a call. And at first base, and David Hicks was our first baseman, and he came back, and I said to David, I said, "Did he miss it?" And he goes, "No, I thought he was going to miss it, but he is pretty good." I said, "I know he is."
So by Ken Joyce, the Lugnuts manager in 2005 and 2006, what were Thirsty Thursdays like back then?
Crazy, absolutely crazy. Loved it, though. Loved it. Loved the crowd, loved the enthusiasm. You know, the support for the team, like I said, was outstanding, and can't help it. Thursdays, they had their own way. And our hitting coach, Charles Poe, he's a legend. Poe's a legend in everybody. I mean, everybody knows him. He had his own little group of people that had their T-shirts on, the Poe group, that would sit down there on Thirsty Thursdays. It was crazy. Like, it almost doubled the section of people that were down there with him. But I think that overall, I think the team itself. myself, I think, as far as the community is concerned, everybody got involved. You know, really, I don't even remember any trouble off the field that we had. I think it was all positive, the things that we did in the community and the things that the players brought to the fans themselves, including the host families and things like that. So I'm proud of what happened there those 2 years.
So from the Blue Jays, then to the Giants, and from the Giants then to the Yankees, what brought you to the Brewers?
So unfortunately, contraction. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of my former colleagues that are no longer in the game, and it's unfortunate. The game's changed. I mean, let's face it, the game has changed.
In a lot of ways.
And so when I got the call from the Yankees, Phil Plantier was a triple-A hitting coach. I was a double-A hitting coach. Phil had been let go a few days before, and I'm thinking there's no way they're going to let both of us go. They need somebody with experience with triple-A. Unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. And when I was let go, it was that I was on a one-year deal, so was Phil. The three coaches underneath us that had come from the college level were all on multi-year deals. And also making probably a third of what we were. And when I was told that it basically came down to money, my answer was really good with the Yankees. And I said, I understand, but I feel bad for the kids because you have nobody with experience and nobody's been above A ball, but I understand it's a business, you know. And again, they gave me glowing recommendations, thanked me for everything I did. I walked away and did 1 year of independent ball again. But then I got a call from Jason Lane, former player, played with us in AAA in Vegas when I was with the Blue Jays, and he's our third base coach for the Brewers, and he said, hey, we have an opening. He goes, I'm recommending you. And I ended up 7 hours of interviews over Zoom with people half my age, a lot of them, which was interesting. And one of the questions that I was asked was, looking at your resume, you've done a lot, how have you survived being in baseball? And my answer was, well, I think that word survival is a little offensive. I said, survival for me are people that are still in the game because of cronyism or nepotism. I don't have either. I said, what I've done is I've adapted. I can take the analytics that is popular now, and I can translate it into teaching kids how to do it. Right? Being a teacher is what I do. So I think that right there kind of summed up that's why I'm still in the game, as opposed to a lot of people who aren't. But again, I still feel like I have a little bit to give. I enjoy doing the hitting. I love managing, but I enjoy doing the hitting. As my wife says, I don't take it home with me. Like I used to.
Yeah.
You know, I can leave it at the park.
That's maturity.
And that's what it is. And, you know, I have a lot of different insight for some of these players because I've been around a little bit. Again, there's a college mentality a little bit. It's coming to pro ball. With the players themselves, and one thing that I've had to also adapt to is that when the college team changed and that they restricted how many games and how many hours coaches are allowed to be with players, that really affects us. People don't realize that because these kids come into pro ball, they had the key to the kingdom because they would go to the batting cage by themselves because they weren't allowed to be with the coach and they would not know how to work. So when I get kids to come and they're with me right now, and I'm like, whoa, it's April, slow down. This is not a sprint, this is a marathon. You can't be taking 200 swings a day. The kids get offended because it's what they know. This is what they did in college because nobody was monitoring. So it's kind of like, hey, wait a minute. But what was nice here is Willie Adames came in on rehab. First thing Willie said to the five or six guys that I'm talking about, hey, watch. You guys take way too many swings. Work smart, not just hard. Listen to this guy. It's been an interesting transition at this level, you know.
You told them that the fences are a little bit too high and help the guys' stats a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's part of the renovation. It's fine. I mean, plus, they told me the wind blows out here. I haven't seen it blow in yet. I mean, blow out yet. It's been blowing in. Everybody told me.
This has felt like a pitcher's park.
Yeah, it has. Well, again, the Giants, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Giants. We had in Richmond, we had a hitter's background in Richmond that had it was like a reflective material that when the sun set, the three innings couldn't see the ball. And I kept saying, I will go buy that black paint and I will paint that thing. Okay? The hitters will do it. We will do it. And I was told by Dick Tidrow, who ran the organization, who's a pitcher guy.
Somebody's got to look out for the hitters.
Nope. I mean, that's what the game was going to be. But we laughed at it because there was a baseball card that came out of one of our pitchers where the ball was coming to home plate, and all you saw was a black sphere. You couldn't see any kind of spin rotation or any kind of seams at all. And I'm like, so basically I told our hitters, there's three ways that the pitcher's trying to get you out. And they're going to, up and down, in and out, okay, and back and forth. I said, so what I want you to do is, I said, you can't tell speed because you can't see the spin. Really, I said, the only thing you're going to be able to see is rotation. So just look for a ball at the middle of the plate and just attack it for the first 3 inches. If it's not over the heart of the plate, let it go. And that's kind of how we went about it. But, I mean, we had the quickest 3 innings in Richmond every year that I was there for 7 years. It was crazy. There's nobody to see it.
Joined by Ken Joyce, let me ask you just another question about hitting. Because we talked about everything that's changed. And there was the contraction, and there's the pitch clock, and there are the different rule changes. But also, there's pitching stuff. There's guys throwing velocities that they didn't throw before and spin rates that they didn't have before. So how does that affect you as a hitting coach?
Well, for me, the game hasn't changed as far as that. It's rhythm and timing. And as a matter of fact, when I was in the Atlantic League, which was the independent league I was in before I came to the Brewers, we were experimenting with moving the mound back a foot.
Yes.
So we did that. And Theo Epstein was in charge of that from the Major League Baseball side, and we had a conference call where I actually spoke up with Paul Menhart, who was our pitching coach at the time, who was the pitching coach for the Nationals when they won the World Series. And Paul and I were, Paul's concern for the pitchers and their safety, my concern is moving the mound back isn't going to make a difference. Because what's happening, and the reason why it's they're struggling at the higher levels, is nobody teaches rhythm and timing. So what I said to him is, I said, and we had a couple of major league players that were on, former major league players were on the call, and I said, okay, gentlemen, when Randy Johnson faced Pedro Martinez, okay, they both had different release points. Randy Johnson was a lot closer to home plate than Pedro Martinez was. And Randy Johnson's were a lot harder. Okay, but they both got hit. It's not the distance. It's whether you're on time and whether you're in rhythm. And I said, and those are two words that nobody uses for hitting anymore. So Theo says, well, Kenny, what am I supposed to do? Call all 30 teams and tell them to change your hitting philosophy? I said, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying moving the mound back isn't going to make a difference. If you're on time and on plane and in rhythm, guys will hit. It doesn't matter how hard the ball is. You know? And that's to me, that's the biggest thing that is lacking right now, which I'm able to still do, is that guys understand. You can't swing harder if it's coming faster. And you can't start later and be more violent. You got to go earlier and slower to get yourself in position. So it's just interesting that with all the metrics we have and all the video we have and all that, it still comes down to on time, on plane.
And thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate it. And hello to everybody back in Lansing. And I look forward. I think we come there later in the year, or we don't.
This is it. Yes, sir.
Man, I was hoping to come to Lansing.
Well, you could skip out on me.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Have you enjoyed wearing the Utter Tugger uniform?
It's different. It's different. We've got some crazy uniforms, though. But you know what? It's minor league baseball. It's what we do. And, you know, I think it's, you know, they do a really good job here. And like I said, they were good to not only me, also when my brother, back in the day, when my brother came here at umpire, they took care of him when he was here. And, you know, I was kind of happy that when I found out I was kind of here. With the renovation too, because it's basically ridiculous.
One more quick question: do your players know that you, in a game in college, collected 7 hits?
They don't, but yeah, I was, and you know the worst part about that?
Yeah.
At first at bat, I lined out with the pitcher and got doubled in on a hit and run. Probably the best ball I hit all day. Lined up double play. Should have been. But I'll take it.
Legendary Ken Jones and the Maine Baseball Hall of Famer. Yeah. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Jesse Goldberg-Strasser, and this is Lug Nuts Baseball.
Celebrate the history of our national pastime at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum in Cooperstown. See priceless treasures that'll bring your baseball memories to life. Connect with events that have shaped and changed the game and our country. Our stories to tell, your memories to share. Plan your visit today at baseballhall.org.
Baseball fans, introducing Bally Live, the only app where minor league baseball fans can score major rewards. When you stream your favorite teams live, you'll score rewards. When you chat with friends during a watch party, you'll score rewards. And when you test your skills at trivia, you'll score rewards. Being a fan of minor leagues has never been so rewarding. So what are you waiting for? Download Bally Live for free from the App or Play Store and start scoring rewards today.
Hey, Ann, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry. I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Jessica Obrachowska joined by outfielder Clark Elliott. On the drive here to Appleton, did we almost go past your hometown?
Yeah, we basically drove right by. You know, I'm probably about 30 minutes off the highway that we took straight through here, so familiar grounds, that's for sure.
After you were drafted and signed, did your family immediately say, okay, get to the Midwest League, we can come to your games?
Yeah, exactly. My parents were super excited when I got that call up, you know, because it's short drives for everybody. You know, my girlfriend only lives 45 minutes away from us in Lansing, so everybody's close by. It's really nice.
For you, growing up in Barrington, Cubs fan?
Cubs fan, absolutely. Northside fan.
Who is your favorite player?
Growing up, you know, I had a lot of favorites. Kosuke Fukudome, Alfonso Soriano, Starlin Castro, Aramis Ramirez. You know, just kind of the quintessential Cubs players of that era are my favorite guys.
With outfielder Clark Elliott, were you always an outfielder or did you play other positions?
No, going into college, I was an infielder, you know, and, you know, circumstance kind of does its own little thing. Our starting outfielder, my freshman year, broke his collarbone in a skiing accident, you know, in December. So that kind of opened the door for me. You know, really unfortunate for him, but for me, I'm really grateful, you know, because I was able to play right away and start all 14 games of that COVID season.
Have you ever asked to still take a few ground balls?
You know, I try to every once in a while. You know, I mean, being versatile is so important in today's game, so I try to, like, stay sharp with my skills, obviously, as long as it's not taken away from my work in the outfield.
What's your favorite play in the outfield?
You know, making a nice catch in the gap is always really feel good. And it always helps out the pitcher, you know.
Yes.
You know, taking away a hit from a guy is just, it feels good.
Making a diving catch, is that something you can practice?
Yeah. You just got to go hard in BP, you know, simulate. You don't have to dive every single time, but, you know, on balls that you would dive, at least give, like, a little bit of effort, you know, just to at least make a mental note that you would have dived on that play.
What led you to the University of Michigan?
The great academics and the great athletics, you know, it's the greatest university in the world. The combination of both, all that, just made it an easy decision for me.
You say that my broadcast partner could have said the same exact thing. There's something about Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. How'd you choose your major?
You know, I wanted something that was going to challenge me off the field. You know, you go to such a good institution to be challenged on the field, obviously athletically, but, you know, it doesn't just end there. I didn't want to do a cakewalk major. I wanted to be challenged off the field as well.
So what'd you choose?
Cognitive science. Specialty in decision and cognition.
Yeah, tell me more about this. So what classes does cognitive science lead you through?
Yeah, it's basically a combination of comp sci, philosophy, psychology, neuroscience, and statistics all kind of combined in one. So my specialties, for me, I was in a lot of psych classes, a lot of comp sci classes, and a lot of philosophy classes.
That's awesome. Was there something that you learned that knocked your socks off, that blew you away?
You know, just learning about GTO, game theory optimal, is really interesting for me because it can be applied to so many things, poker, chess, all sorts of other games, and it's just kind of interesting to go through those problems.
Can you apply it to baseball?
Yeah, absolutely can, you know, and that's what stats and statisticians are so important in today's game, you know, because they're running so many models to figure out the most optimal way to put some guys on the outfield and what to look for in the box.
With stats, is there a stat that you would say, Jesse, look at this when it comes to me, that's a good way of evaluating what I'm doing, or you can't encapsulate what you're doing via any statistic?
You know, I feel like for most baseball players, you have to be able to look at both. You know, you've got to be able to do the eye test, you've got to be able to look at the numbers, and if they can both be validated, that's when you have great players.
Let me go back to college. We go on the road. You play Michigan State, you hit 3 home runs at Jackson Field. What was that day like in the rain?
Yeah, it was a pretty amazing day. You know, it was Jackie Robinson Day. My grandmother had just passed a couple weeks before, so it was a really emotional game for me. And just to be able to go out there and play my best, you know, rivalry game as well. Playing in a minor league ballpark, it was awesome. Just to have that experience.
Did you get a game ball to keep?
I did. I was able to keep one.
Was there a better game for you at Michigan?
would say, you know, Big Ten championship game. That's hard not to point at that one because, you know, three home runs is awesome, but you don't win a championship in April. You win it later down the season.
How special was that team?
Yeah, it was an awesome experience. You know, our team wasn't – we weren't expected to do much going into the Big Ten tournament. We weren't going to make a regional unless we won the tournament, and we got hot at the right time.
You get drafted by the A's. Did all the other Michigan Wolverines in the A's system reach out to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, those are all my teammates. You know, former Jeff Criswell, Blake Beers, all those guys, Jack Weisenberger, you know, they've been really a great help to me, you know, walking me through this whole process and kind of giving me a better understanding of what this organization has.
Let me bring up a bad memory. Last year, one professional game, did you pull your hamstring?
Pulled hamstring, yeah. Sucks, you know. Yeah, it wasn't ideal. You know, I wasn't playing summer ball, so kind of out of game shape and kind of having to build up into it. You know, it stinks, you know, but it just made my hunger to get on the field even stronger.
How'd you spend your off season?
For me, I stayed in Arizona, trained at Driveline, you know. A data-driven training facility over there in Arizona, and it was awesome to stay with amazing guys.
How was spring training this year?
It was so much fun. Just to be able to be back on the field, you know, play again. I mean, it was amazing.
And then Stockton. I don't know much about Stockton, except I was watching every single box score. What was it like being a port?
You know, I really enjoyed being in Stockton. You know, the team was so much fun. Great group of guys. The coaches were amazing. You know, some of my closest friends are on that Stockton team now. So it was just a great experience. We're all going for it today. You know, the talent's tough. It's hard. It's hot. The facilities aren't always the best. But, you know, we're going for it. It's really good experience.
Let me ask you for an advanced scouting report. What have Brendan Malone and Kobe Thomas done?
Oh, they're great ball players. And they're even better guys off the court. You know, that's really the report you want to hear. With this, Kobe and Brendan are some of the best friends. They're awesome guys. And I love them.
Something I find just with the Oakland A's, just guy after guy I meet, it's just good people. Forget the baseball player. How's this clubhouse been for
you? Yeah, same thing. You know, a lot of guys pick one over when, you know, Lee, Johnny, all these guys, Mons, you know. They're a bunch of great guys I've been out with. On the field and off the field, most of my time going out.
So, final baseball question. What are you working on now?
You know, just getting consistent, you know, trying to play a little bit more comfortable with the play, you know. And learn to deal with these ups and downs, you know. It's not easy, obviously, with baseball. You never really prepare for it until you get through it. So just kind of trying to stay positive on all stuff.
Have there been any parallels where you started either in high school or started in college to starting out in minor league baseball?
Not really. It's been completely different to all that stuff, you know. I'm thankful for that, you know. It's a challenge, and I'm looking forward to it.
And then last question entirely is, besides baseball, what else do you really enjoy?
Oh, all sorts of stuff, you know.
Thank you.
too, that it's individual for you to go out there and do your part, but then it all feeds into the team accomplishments of the no-hitter.
How did that feel afterwards, being like, we did this, and I had a big part to play in this?
You know, we all took a picture afterwards, and it's a picture I'll have for the rest of my life. A good group of guys went out and accomplished something together on an individual basis, but when you put it all together at the end, it's really cool.
How'd you spend your offseason?
Spent my offseason in Birmingham for the most part, a little bit in California, but it was good. Just spent time with my fiance, my dogs, and, you know, my family, so it was good.
When's your wedding?
Wedding is October 7th, coming up quick after the season, so it'll be good.
Yeah, baseball season being spent planning your wedding?
My fiance is doing most of the work, you know, if I provide what input I can, but she's in charge, and that's fine with me, so... you know, I try to help where I can. I should probably be more helpful, but so far she's doing a great job.
You've got a lot on your plate. She's got a lot on her plate. What did you work on baseball-wise in the offseason?
In the offseason, I worked on getting stronger. You know, I think the stronger that I can be, the healthier I can be, whether it, you know, translates to more deal or not. Obviously not yet, but the strength part of it, I've been feeling good. I've been throwing the ball well. So as long as I can, you know, continue to build on what I just worked on, you know, once I've been back, we've developed more of a sweeping slider. That's been good, you know, still working on getting the change up all the way there, but more or less just strength and trying to be, you know, healthy for the duration of the whole season.
Yeah, I love that answer because, of course, the follow-up is, why do you want to get stronger? How does that help you? And if it just contributes to good health and keeps you ready and raring to go the entire year, that's all that you really need.
Yeah, everyone wants to be healthy for the duration of the season. You want to contribute as much as you can. You want to get all your innings in if you're a position player, you want to play all your games. You know, missing time on the field is not, you know, what anyone wants to do. So if anything, it improves the health or my overall health, you know, and I stay out there for as much as possible and, you know, I've achieved what I wanted to.
The slider, I think, was new last year, right? Is the sweeper, is the movement different? Is the shape different?
Yeah, it's moving a lot more horizontally. And it's about the same vertically, so I just was trying to create something that maybe, you know, the slider originally last year was the same velocity, but it wasn't moving as much, and Blake Beers helped me out throwing a little bit more around the ball. Schultz's been working with me, so getting that movement horizontally off of, you know, a two-seam or a changeup, and then having the curveball that I don't throw a whole lot, but if I need to, I can get it there. It's kind of just another, you know, step or another piece of my repertoire that's been helpful.
What's the next step for your changeup?
Getting on top of it, getting it to bottom out more. We can, you know, like Mac, for example, like the horizontal movements there, the thing's got depth. Like, I've got the horizontal, I need to get the depth aspect of it every time, you know, not few and far between, where last year I feel like I was doing it a lot more, so it's just one of those things that, you know, you got to keep working on and keep getting better.
You walked a guy last outing. I'm not used to seeing that. Does that hurt?
Yeah, it does hurt. That's the goal, is to not walk guys, obviously, and I take pride in my command, and if that's all I got, you know, I want to make sure that I am doing it, pitching the way I should every time, and that, you know, is giving up a single or a double here and there, but not allowing free base runners on. So if I didn't walk that guy in the ninth, the inning would have been a lot easier, you know, but I walked that guy the second batter of the inning, and now every pitch from there is a stress pitch, trying to make sure it doesn't score. Obviously, you're trying to win the game, so if I, you know, do what I'm supposed to do, and I get after hitters, you know, hopefully my job continues to be relatively easy.
When the starters do what they're supposed to do, when they're handling business, you're not pitching that much. You might see only one inning or one appearance over the course of a week. That's great for the starters. It makes it easier for the bullpen. You get to relax. But how is that pitching only once a week and not very much?
I obviously would like to pitch as much as I can, but everyone's got jobs here. You know, the position players are working hard in the field. They're trying to manufacture runs. The starting pitchers are trying to give the bullpen as much longevity as they can. The less we throw, the healthier we stay, obviously. But I want to throw every day. So everyone's got a job, you know. Like when you, like Kumar had to come in and, you know, throw those two pitches the other night, and that was it for his outing. Like, I'm sure he would have loved to throw more, but that's his job. You know, the team does not, like, oh, I want to do this, I want to do that. It's like everyone's got a job, and you do your job, and we win ball games, you know. And, you know, if you do your job well, you get to go, you get promoted. You know, Perkins did a really good job. Beers did a really good job. So he did a really good job. They all get promoted. Like, you do what you're assigned to do, and hopefully it works out. You know, it's the way it is.
But your job isn't limited to simply throwing a pitch on the mound. What kind of leadership role do you have on this team?
You know, me and Kumar and Brock and all those guys, we've all been here. Mac, obviously, like, we try to, you know, make sure we are working hard, setting a good example. There's a lot of leaders on this team, a lot of older guys. So we've got a good core group of guys that are kind of, you know, making sure that, if anything, you're setting a good example for everyone else around you.
Joined by Jack Owen, how's it feel to be a Velo boy?
Feels great. You know, me and Beller, Mac, and Kumar, we made the shirts, and it's been pretty fun. Schulze's got one. He wears it out for BP sometimes, and he loves it. So, you know, I mean, we do what we can with what we got, and, you know, if we pitch well, like, you know, the Velo is one thing, but, like, if you pitch well, you perform. You know, your job is to get out. It's not to throw hard.
What's the state of Auburn athletics right now?
It's looking good. You know, football season's coming up. The 2024 schedule just got released. There's a lot of new names on it that aren't normally there, with Oklahoma joining the mix, Texas joining the mix. So we don't play our LSU or Ole Miss or Mississippi State, so that'll be different. But, you know, I'm excited for the future of Auburn athletics.
Always a joy to catch up with you, Jack. War Eagle.
War Eagle. Thanks, Jesse.
Jack Owen, Lansing Lugnuts lefty. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strasser, and this is Lugnuts Baseball.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other and build family memories we will carry with us forever. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. It's easy. Just put in your zip code to find family-friendly outdoor destinations near you. You'll also find guides to free activities, games, and amazing forest facts. Give the magic of the outdoors to your kids and reconnect with your family. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Alex Jensen, voice of the Stockton Ports, single-A affiliate of the Oakland Athletics. You're listening to Lansing Lugnuts Baseball. Now, let's get back to the ballpark. Here's Jesse Goldberg-Strassler.
Joined by John Beller, I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. I was reading your USC bio, and it said one of your hobbies is photography. How did you get into photography?
So, I definitely would say that I'm not nearly as into it as much anymore, and I think like the golf itch has definitely replaced that.
Yeah,
but that was another thing. Just when I was in high school, I mean, I grew up in such a beautiful part of the world, like being in Southern California. I mean, you could go take a picture of anything, you know, I mean, and make it look half decent. But, you know, I think, again, it was just a way for me to get my mind off the field and have another thing to do outside of baseball. And there was actually one of my good buddies who's one of Blake's friends as well. He was taking a photography class in school, and that was really what started it, what kind of like was the catalyst. I don't know, when we were kids, you know, like being artsy on Instagram was like a big thing and all this stuff. So got a camera and started kind of just taking it everywhere, and I started to really enjoy it. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
You went to USC,
yes.
So that your mom went to USC.
Mm-hmm.
So how proud was she of you?
So that's kind of an interesting story, because my mom went to USC. So I grew up a USC football fan. I had the Reggie Bush Rose Bowl jersey, you know. My dad actually went to Dartmouth. So he, like, all through recruiting was a big proponent of me going to an Ivy League school, hammering the grades, you know, test score. He played football there too, so he knew what it was like to be an athlete and do the whole academic thing at an Ivy League school as well. So I actually committed to Harvard going into my senior year of high school. And as the months went by, I kind of just, you know, I started throwing harder and getting attention to bigger schools. My dream school was always Stanford. You know, it didn't work out for me to go there, but I started getting interest in, you know, schools in the pack like USC, UCLA, you know, like, let's say Berkeley, just some of the bigger schools that were also, you know, academic institutions as well. And so I went on a visit to SC, and I was just, it was like, man, I know I need to be here. Like, I need to go to school here. It was just kind of one of those feels that you can't really explain. But I left the campus after that visit and had a long conversation with both my parents, and they just said, you know, if this is what you want to do, you have our full support, and just make sure you take it seriously and get your degree. That was the biggest thing. You know, if I was going to sign after 3 years, make sure I got the degree. So, I loved it, and it's definitely been a family affair of, you know, rooting for the Trojans.
Does the Yale guy in the clubhouse know that you almost went to Harvard?
Yes, he does, and I do get crap for it. So that would have been a lot of fun playing against Kumar and being full circle here. But Kumar's living proof that you can go play in the Ivy League and get to Pro Bowl and, you know, have a lot of success. So, I think the decision was the best for me. And, I've had a lot of fun, just meeting a lot of people. And it was definitely a rocky road, you know.
Kumar and you are now brothers in a very select club. How did you get the idea to found the Velo Boys?
Okay, so I can't take full credit of the founding, right? So I designed the shirts. I had them made, and we all pitched in to get them purchased, and now they're obviously our BP tops every day. But when I got here, Jack Owen, Mac Lardner, Kumar were like, hey, you know, how hard do you throw? And Mac already kind of knew because we were at the Cardinals together, but I was like, you know, I'm going to be 88 to 90, maybe touch 91. And what's your average fastball velocity? I'm probably like 89, I don't know, you know. But they were like, all right, you know, we got four lefties now who are a very exclusive club. Not a lot of guys in pro ball who sit under 90 miles an hour. And we started calling ourselves Velo Boys, and it very quickly became our identity. And it's, I don't know, it's a lot of fun just kind of giving guys crap for throwing hard. Because it's always the other way around. So people are jealous of the Velo Boys, man. They want to be a part of the club, but it takes a certain criteria that not everybody has, man.
Yeah. You gave Don Schulze a Velo Boys shirt, right?
Yes.
What was his reaction?
I think he was so caught off guard at first, but he has absolutely grown to love it. He's worn it out to BP several times, and we took a picture all together. So that'll definitely be one for the memories for me forever. I mean, like, him smiling when we gave it to him and enjoying wearing it was a really cool moment for us. It's been a lot of fun.
The thing about having a fastball that is not in the 90s, you've got to, and I'm sorry to use the cliche, know how to pitch.
Right.
How did you learn how to pitch?
Well, I would say, you know, the entirety of my, like, advanced baseball career, so let's say college and pro ball, I've always been good at spinning the ball to my glove side. So whether that's throwing a curveball or a slider, that's always been my strength. And now I batted a cutter as well. But I've always had strength making the ball move to my glove side. And the further I've gone along in pro ball, you know, the more I've kind of realized that I can pitch off my secondary stuff, my breaking stuff, as opposed to just having to rely on a fastball like your traditional 93-plus pitchers. It's actually funny, like, my slider is definitely my best pitch, and I got to give credit to another USC guy in the organization, Dan Hubbs. My sophomore year in college, I was talking to him. I was like, Hubby, I think I want to learn a fourth pitch. I'm starting, you know, I think it would be beneficial to get me through the lineup a second, third time. And we were just out in the right field line at USC in catch play one day talking about this, and he was like, well, you know, this is how I threw my slider. Like, let's mess around with it a little bit. I've thrown the same grip ever since, and that's been my claim to fame this far in pro ball. So, I got to give credit where it's due there.
Blake Pierce, his best pitch, to my mind, fastball's great. The changeup's great. He's come back with a cutter. That slider
For
is
sure.
special.
For sure.
What's the differences and similarities between Blake's slider and yours?
So, metrically, we honestly throw pretty similar sliders. They're kind of just like the mirror images of one another. And everybody's, all the pitching staff are calling them a whirly. It's a slider that has not a ton of vertical movement, but a big load of horizontal movement. It's a sweeping slider. It's definitely become more trendy in baseball as of late. I think, I don't know if that's just because it's harder to make the ball do that than your traditional slider, which kind of will just like dart down. But yeah, Blake came back. You know, I think it was probably at the end of last year, maybe beginning of last year, with that slider, and it's been a phenomenal pitch for him. And I love watching him throw it, man. Like, again, like, he really knows how to pitch off the slider as well as pitching off the fastball, you know, so he's not just limited to having to pitch guys by the book, if you know what I'm saying.
Let me bring in Mac Lardner.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Mac, member of the Cardinals organization,
right.
Given your release, signed with the Oakland A's,
right.
What are the differences and similarities between the Cardinals org and the A's org?
Yeah, so I think there honestly might be more differences than there are similarities. Like, maybe the biggest similarity being that they're both professional baseball organizations. But other than that, there are a lot of stark differences, and one of which is I think the level of communication here is second to none. I think the A's do a really good job kind of letting guys know, you know, what you need to do to move up, to move, like, or to move wherever you want to be, whether that's the next level or ultimately the big leagues. I think, you know, your future here is kind of in the palm of your hands, and there's obviously a lot more freedom here. The Cardinals have a very long, rich history of, you know, the Cardinal way. It's like very much attention to detail, whether that's on the field or off the field, you know, showing up every day in polo and closed-toed shoes. So that's very different. I think there's definitely something to be said for that, like uniform and you know, doing things as a unit. But coming here and being able to come relax, I know sometimes I'm wearing flip-flops out here now that it's sunny and 75 every day. It's beautiful, but that's definitely something that I wasn't able to do there. And I think Mac would say the same. Like, we have very much enjoyed our time in this organization, and it's been a lot of fun. And I think there's more of an emphasis on fun here. I think there's an understanding that, you know, guys are gonna be able to do their best, whether that's in terms of development or getting outs on the field, when we're able to have fun with one another and go out there and just play a kid's game at the end of the day.
It's so funny, your mustache. You joined the A's. The mustache is part of the A's way.
Yes. So I remember walking into Fitch Park back in Mesa, getting into the complex for the first time when I was signing my contract, and obviously there's like big murals of everybody on the wall. You know, you got Barry Zito, you got guys like Dennis Eckersley, just Mark Pryor, not Mark Pryor, he's a Trojan, sorry, I'm thinking of Barry Zito, Trojan, but there's a lot of guys. And then I walked by Raleigh Fingers, and I'm like, dang, I think I gotta bring the mustache back, you know? But yeah, there's definitely a lot of rich mustache history in the organization, so I hadn't really thought about that prior, but it's always kind of been one of my things during baseball season. So fun organization to be able to rock the mustache in, for sure.
One more baseball question, one non-baseball question. The baseball question is, what are you working on right now? What should I watch for with you?
So lately, I've been working on a new curveball grip. When I signed with the A's, I was throwing a curveball and a slider, and the consensus was, you know, with the coordinating staff to kind of put the curveball away for a while and focus on the slider and the cutter mostly, which I have been doing, and I've definitely seen some success, you know, pitching with those two pitches primarily. The main reason we wanted to get away from the curveball is because at times it would start to blend into the slider. And lately in catch play, let's say the past 4 weeks now probably, I've been working on a new grip, and where the slider is big horizontal movement, the new grip for the curveball can get me big negative vertical movement. So it's a very different look from what my curveball used to be. And it's something that I've been tinkering with in catch play and in the bullpen, you know, before games. I don't know if I'm necessarily ready to throw it into the game yet, aside from certain situations. So, like, if I have to make a big leverage pitch, I'm probably not going to use it, but the catchers know that it's in the arsenal. They've both caught it, so they know it's there. And if the situation calls for it, like long at bat, or if I'm ahead 0-2, 1-2, and we want to get something different, like, I'm ready to try it. So, yeah, that's definitely been something I've been working on for sure.
Lastly, with John Beller, it's Star Wars night.
Yes.
Your thoughts?
Oh, man. I think, growing up, Star Wars was my brother's favorite movie franchise. So it definitely holds a special place in my heart, being able to have Star Wars night at the park. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We got awesome Han Solo unis. Our strength coach, Steve, was already cracking some Star Wars jokes earlier. So it's a good deal. I think it's a good thing for the fans, and I think, you know, the folks who work here at Jackson Field do a great job with the promotions and getting the town and our fans involved. Looking forward to come out and see the Mets play.
Star Wars was your brother's favorite. Was there a different franchise that was your favorite?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I had a favorite franchise, per se, as a kid. But nowadays, I think, you know, the Kingsman movies?
Yes.
I am so obsessed with those movies. So not quite on the same wavelength as Star Wars, but that's right up my alley. I love some action and comedy all together and maybe a little bit of romance as well. But, you know it.
John, this has been a joy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Lansing Lugnuts lefty John Beller. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, and this is Lugnuts Baseball.
The same house was founded to create greater economic mobility and build stronger communities through social connection. Join us at thesamehouse.org to learn more. The same house, same city, worlds apart. Let's bridge the gap.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
This is Vince Cotroneo, radio broadcaster for the Oakland Athletics, and you're listening to Lansing Lugnuts Baseball. Now let's get back to the ballpark. Here's Jesse Goldberg-Strassler.
This is Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, joined by Mitch Myers. How's the season going?
So far so good, man. A few ups and downs, but keeping the head on straight and grinding through it, you know?
This spring training, this was for you coming back. You get drafted in 2021. You pitched last year in Stockton. So this was your second spring training. Did you come into it with any goals, any aims for yourself different from your first one?
Yeah, I think after the first season, kind of seeing what pro ball was like and realizing, you know, it's kind of a marathon, especially as a starting pitcher, I had a better idea of what I wanted to do this year. And also, I learned some things last year that I took into the offseason that could help me this year. And just been working on those things and continuing to try to hammer them home throughout the season here with Chelsea.
What things?
I got a new slider. Been working on that a lot, trying to throw it more consistently and get swing and miss on it. Like you've seen a couple of times, messing with timing, you know, quick pitching and an extra leg lift with the extra load sometimes. Those are just a couple of things, you know, and at the same time, keep trying to improve the curveball and fastball location.
I want to get back to the quick pitch, but first, if you don't mind me walking into the weeds, what's the difference between this slider compared to your last slider?
The slider I'm working on now is more of a sweeper, trying to get it to sweep a little more, while still throwing it kind of hard to have some sharpness. Versus last year's, it was more of a gyro pitch. It didn't serve me as well as I wanted it to. That's kind of the reason I'm trying to expand the offering a little bit.
The people who need to be ready for a quick pitch, the batter, the catcher, the umpire, also me. I'm glad. I have to be ready to know when it's coming. When did you first start throwing a quick pitch?
Yeah, Shelby suggested it to me like a few weeks ago just because he sees me out of the stretch. I don't really have much of a leg lift out of the stretch. I'm kind of quick to the plate. So he saw that I could probably do that out of the windup sometimes and just to mix off speed in, you know, try to catch the hitter out in front of it. So, I kind of came from Shelby in that. I felt like I had the body control to do it, so.
Have you seen good reactions from the batters so far? It makes you smile?
Sort of. I've heard good things from guys, like, standing in the bullpen and stuff, but, and I've got a couple outs the game before last. I only did it one time last start. Ended up being a hit, but I wish I wouldn't have done it so early in the game right there. First batter, you know, 0-2 count. I wish I would have just tried to make a quality pitch rather than messing with his timing, per se, to begin the game, but, yeah, I mean, seeing some results with it.
Before even the pitch clock was a thing, I was told you're a guy who liked to work fast. True?
Yeah, it's definitely true. Pitch clock, you know, I feel like it helps me a little bit. The only time I'd say, like, it's a problem is if me and the catcher aren't on the same page, we're trying to find a pitch, you might have to burn a step off. But, yeah, for me, pitch clock doesn't really change much for my flow through the game.
With signs, do you have a generally a good idea of what you want to throw each pitch?
I like to trust the catcher most of the time. Hindsight's 20/20, obviously. So sometimes, you know, I wish I would have thrown other stuff in certain counts. And so, yeah, I mean, trust the catcher. But at the same time, I can throw whatever I want. So it's on me to throw what I want.
You're a chess player. Does playing chess help you out at all with pitch sequencing?
I wouldn't say directly it helps me out. Chess for me is more just a way to, like, zone out almost. So I don't really relate chess to baseball.
That's awesome. Joined by Mitch Myers. Okay, I want to go back to your pitches, and then we'll get into other matters away from baseball. There's your slider. How's your fastball doing?
Fastball's been good, you know. Right now, I'm going to try to get it down in the zone. I haven't been working a lot in the down in the zone, and I kind of feel like maybe that's why I'm not able to get as many punch-outs as I'm used to, just because guys don't have to respect the breaking balls down and out of the zone as much when I'm not getting the fastball down there. So that's something I'm working on right now. And then being able to expand up when I want to and not just live up there at times, you know?
How's your change?
Change has been a solid pitch for me. It's helped me a lot this year. Change up the pitch, it's a big field pitch, so sometimes you're going to have it, sometimes you're not. More times than not, I do have it, and I feel really comfortable with my changeup, so definitely a good pitch to keep the pitchers off balance this year.
What's your grip?
I use like a two-seam grip on it. I feel like it takes a little more spin off, gets a little more weight that way.
With the changeup, usually there are pitchers I've talked to who still are trying to find it. Did you find it relatively early, or was that a more recent thing?
Just more recent in the pro ball, just because in college I worked on it some, but it definitely wasn't a comfortable pitch for me, and I didn't really have to throw it as much in college. So last year in Stockton, that's something that A's really hammered home with their starting pitchers. They wanted 20 to 25% changeups, and that's something I did and I was able to do, and I kind of just took that pitch, improved it, and then now it's a useful pitch for me for sure.
Do you have percentages now that you're working at after each game that you go, this is what I wanted to do?
Not this year. We look at how the percentage of pitches thrown, but less than last year about hammering home the percentages. More this year about just, you know, trying to get out your best stuff.
Okay, curveball. Your final pitch, right? We've talked everything else. How's the curve doing?
Curve's getting better. It's a pitch that is also new to me. I only threw a fastball slider sometimes to change in college, so coming into pro ball, I added the curve. And it gives me pretty consistent shape off the other pitches, so it's going to be a downer curveball, whereas the slider I'll get more horizontal. Changeup I'll get more horizontal the other way, and then fastball is pretty true with some ride. So four different pitches, I've just got to figure out how, you know, the best way to sync with some and where to throw them, and that's kind of what I'm working on right now.
Joined by Mitch Myers. You mentioned college. You finished up in Pitt. Take me through your path to Pitt.
Path to Pitt, you know, I was a high school player in Alabama, committed to the University of Alabama out of high school.
Wait, hold on. Were you a Crimson Tide fan growing up?
Yeah, always been an Alabama Crimson Tide fan. My parents were, and you know you're going to be one or the other in Alabama. So, grew up an Alabama fan. They came and recruited me in high school. I committed there, and they kind of had a coaching carousel over the next 2 years that I was committed. I ended up getting decommitted. They didn't have the scholarship money they had originally.
Shoot.
So I explored a couple other options, ended up taking the JUCO route. I thought it was the best fit for me, and I'm definitely glad I did, because going to JUCO really allowed me to get the innings I needed at that age. You know, starter innings, whereas maybe if I go to a D1 program, I don't start right away. So JUCO was huge for me in my development, for sure. So it was also a great time. You know, I loved it down there. And so from JUCO, you know, I just got recruited by Pitt, a few other schools. Pitt gave me the best offer, so I went to get pitched in the ACC for Pitt. It ended up being a great decision. I enjoyed it up there a lot.
I was looking up your JUCO squad. You had a guy get drafted off that team, and you had a bunch of you guys all go D1. How good was that JUCO team?
Man, we were solid. Coming out of high school, I didn't really have a good idea of what JUCO baseball was. But going down to Florida, I mean, that's some of the best JUCO baseball top to bottom in you know, the United States. So yeah. I was surprised when I got there. I was like, okay, like this isn't going to be as easy as I thought it was going to be. And then I had to, you know, I had to grind and get better. And then, yeah, man, we had a team full of studs. Guys get drafted. Guys go play D1 all up and down. It's cool.
What was your experience like at Pitt?
At Pitt, man, it was a lot of fun. It was interesting because my junior season, you know, I expected to get drafted junior year. Then COVID happens. I had a really strong start to the season. COVID happened. Ended up not getting drafted. Just worked. Ended up going to play summer ball in the Coastal Plains League, which was really good. So that's kind of how my COVID year went. And then coming back for senior year at Pitt, ended up getting an opportunity to be the Friday guy. And it went well for me.
Opportunity to be a Friday guy. You earned that spot. That's an enormous honor. How did you feel when they told you?
I mean, I was excited, man, for sure. I just, you know, wanted to take the opportunity and, you know, be the ace for our team, you know, and help us go far. And, you know, we had a really good year. We did miss a series or two and came back and lost some games, and that kept us out of the postseason beyond the ACC tournament, which was really disappointing because there was a point in the season where we were a possible host for the postseason. Kind of fell off towards the end, and that's just how it ended, man.
How do you choose your major at Pitt?
So I originally wanted to go into business. That's what I planned to do, but coming from JUCO, I didn't have all the prerequisites in order to take the business classes at Pitt. So I found the major Health Services Administration, which, you know, it seemed like a great fit for me. I had the credits to start it, and I was able to finish it in 2 years. So.
Joined by Mitch Myers. One more question for you. And I'm grateful to Danny Batista Jr. for letting me know you're ranked number 3 in what?
So I'm ranked number 3 in the world in this video game. It's called Monkey Ball. And Monkey Ball is an old game. It was originally on the GameCube. Played it all the time with my sister growing up. And they remastered it, put it out on PlayStation. So I got back on it, and there's this game on there called Monkey Target. And in Monkey Target, I am number 3 in the world.
Are you known as Mitch Myers, or is there another name that you're known by?
Yeah, my PlayStation name is OG Mitch Myers 99, so.
You are the OG.
OG, man.
Can you get to number 1? Is that a terrible question to ask?
So my score right now on there is like 60-something thousand, and the top 2 scores are 100,000 plus, and I have yet to figure out how they were able to get that score. So at the moment, 3rd is the best we're going to be able to get to right now.
OG Mitch Myers, number 3. Thank you so much for taking the time.
It was my pleasure, man. I always enjoy talking to you.
Love it. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, and this is Lugnuts Baseball. Let's keep it right here on the booth. I'm Jesse Goldberg-Strassler live. Adam Jax is right here, right next to me. Currently, they say that we're in a rain delay in Great Lakes. The rain is not falling, so it's a delay of approaching rain. And unfortunately, Adam, we have news.
So you're saying that raindrops are not falling on your head?
No, they're not. Thank goodness we're inside. The equipment is safe. Future raindrops, though, have postponed tonight's game.
Yeah, we're going to turn this into a future game tonight. Unfortunate, but it seems like the right decision for the Loons. Rain hasn't come down, but it's expected, and some potential thunderstorms. It's also air quality not great. Hasn't been great all day today. So I think best case scenario, let's play 2 tomorrow, and sounds like we're going to play it starting late afternoon, early evening.
So we thank you very much for keeping us company and listening to interview after interview after interview as Adam and I just tried to figure out what in the world was going on. There was no tarp on the field until about 10 minutes before scheduled first pitch. Then they rolled that tarp out. We did not see any players. The players were out much earlier on the field stretching. They knew what was going to happen. And now here comes the rain in Great Lakes very soon. So no baseball tonight. We wish you well. We'll check in with you tomorrow. Jose DiCorcheo and Jake Garland will get the ball as the Lugnuts play their 6th doubleheader of the year.
Let's do it tomorrow. Let's play 2.
Adam, fire up.
Fire up chips, man. Michigander night. We'll postpone it until tomorrow.
That's right. It's the weather. It's pure Michigan.